Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So this morning we will read Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 12. Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. Text 13. Shat.
Shat.
Trim Shat.
Trim Shat.
Var Shat.
Var Shat.
Sahasra,
Sahasra,
Shashasa,
Shashasa,
Shiti,
Shiti,
Mandala,
Mandala,
Bogai,
Bogai,
Punya,
Punya,
Shaya,
Shaya,
Kurva,
Kurva,
Abogai,
Abogai,
Ashubha,
Ashubha,
Shaya,
Shaya.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shashasa Shitti Mandala.
Shashasa Shitti Mandala.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Abhogar Ashubakshayam.
Abhogar Ashubakshayam.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shashasa Shitti Mandala.
Shashasa Shitti Mandala.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Abhogar Ashubakshayam.
Abhogar Ashubakshayam.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shatrim Shadvarsha Sahasra.
Shashasa Kshiti Mandala.
Shashasa Kshiti Mandala.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Bhogai Punyakshayam Kurvan.
Abhogar Ashubakshaya.
Abhogar Ashubakshaya.
36.
Varsha.
Varsha. Years.
Years.
Sahasra.
Sahasra.
Thousand.
Thousand.
Shashasa.
Shashasa.
Rule.
Rule.
Shiti Mandala.
Shiti Mandala.
The earth planet.
Bogai.
By enjoyment. By enjoyment.
Punya.
Of reactions of pious activities.
Shaya.
Diminution. Kurvan.
Doing.
Abogai.
By
austerity.
Ashubha.
Of inauspicious reaction. Shaya. Diminution.
Diminution.
Diminution incidentally means to reduce. Translation. Dhruva Maharaj ruled over this planet for 36,000 years. He diminished the reactions of pious activities by enjoyment and by practicing austerities he diminished inauspicious reactions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. That Dhruva Maharaj ruled over the planet for 36,000 years means that he was present in the Satya Yuga. Because in the Satya Yuga, people used to live for 100,000 years. In the next Yuga, Treta, people used to live for 10,000 years. And in the next Yuga, Dwapara, for 1,000 years. In the present age, the Kali Yuga, the maximum duration of life is 100 years. With the change of the yugas, the duration of life and memory, the quality of kindness, and all other good qualities diminish. There are two kinds of activities, namely pious and impious. By executing pious activities, one can gain facilities for higher material enjoyment. But due to impious activities, one has to undergo severe distress. A devotee, however, is not interested in enjoyment or affected by distress. When he is prosperous, he knows, I am diminishing the results of my pious activities. And when he's in distress, he knows, I am diminishing the reactions of my impious activities. A devotee is not concerned with enjoyment or distress. He simply desires to execute devotional service. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that devotional service should be apratihata, unchecked by the material conditions of happiness or distress. The devotee undergoes processes of austerity, such as observing Ekadasi and similar other fasting days, and refraining from illicit sex life, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Thus, he becomes purified from the reactions of his past impious life, and because he engages in devotional service, which is the most pious activity, he enjoys life without separate endeavor. Shatrumsha Varsha Sahasyam Shashasa Kshiti Mandalam Bogai Punyak Shayam Kurvan Abogar Ashubak Shayam. Dhruva Maharaj ruled over this planet for 36,000 years. He diminished the reactions of pious activities by enjoyment. And by practicing austerities, he diminished inauspicious reactions. Nama Om Vishnu Vilay Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Vanupachara Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadhi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajrapatrabhya Sakriya Sindhubhyevacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Yes, so, Dhruva Maharaj was living in the Satya Yuga, and the conditions were very different then from what they are now. But right now, this is Kali Yuga, of course. The degraded age of Kali, sometimes referred to as the Iron Age, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, these descriptions and titles are given sometimes, and it's quite easy to see why. Yes, things are in a very bad condition, and gradually they are progressing from very bad to, disastrous, to atrocious, to impossible, and from impossible, well, I don't know, very shocking. Yes, the worst is yet to come. So this is Kali Yuga. And among other things, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the duration of life of human beings becomes reduced to 100 years maximum, absolute maximum. I don't know how many of us have ever met a person who was definitely 100 years old, not just claimed to be, that they lost their birth certificate or something, but someone who's actually 100 years old. If you meet someone who's 100 years old, well, they're really old. And the condition of their body is, really very difficult. Shishi Gondatai ki
jai,
Shishi Prahlad Nrisingadev ki
jai.
My mother lived to be 91, and that was bad enough. That was too bad, actually. It just wasn't worth continuing. It just wasn't worth continuing. It was just too painful and just too much distress and confusion. So anyway, this is Kali Yuga. We're all experiencing it to one degree or another. Finland, of course, is famous for being more materially comfortable, except for the weather, perhaps. But in terms of living conditions and housing and facilities and, I guess, medical treatment, and all these types of things, relatively speaking, it is high on the scale. Yes, and many, many other places are really far worse in terms of those facilities and opportunities for living a relatively nice existence. Of course, many of those places that are very poor and somehow or other the economy is just not working well and like that, many of them have very pleasant weather, actually. Yeah. And even many of them are very abundant in the production of very nice foodstuffs and things like this. So, well, anyway, Kali Yuga, you can't have everything, and you don't get everything. And even if you do get everything, like some super rich person, then because it's Kali Yuga, you cannot really enjoy it very much. Prabhupada would say, no matter how rich you are, you can only eat two chapatis, or maybe three. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had a bodyguard who would eat regularly 26 chapatis per meal. For us, that would be very unpleasant. If it was possible, we would definitely suffer. But no matter how rich you are, you can only sit in one motor car at a time. No matter how rich you are, you can only eat so much. no matter how rich you are. Anyway, you understand. It's really like that. It's really like that. But the illusion is there in people's minds, quite, generally quite firmly, you know, situated in their minds, that the amount of happiness you get is proportionate to the amount of money and material facility that you have. This is a commonly accepted idea. And even if people don't say it exactly, but they live according to that principle, which means they believe it. Yeah. That is their philosophy. Prabhupada also explained once, everyone is a philosopher. Even the most simple person who's sweeping the street or just lying in the street, everyone is a philosopher in the sense that everyone has accepted certain ideas and like arguments and become convinced of certain things, and they're living according to those standards, like the more money you get, the happier you'll be. Because you see, people are just trying to get money. It means they believe that. They're convinced of that. So everyone's a philosopher. But in Dhruva Maharaj's time, things were very different. Satyayuga. Prabhupada explains that in Satyayuga there's no suffering. Even though people are on the material level, at least they have material bodies, and it is the material world, and death is there, old age, the conditions of material existence are there. But otherwise, people do not suffer. And Prabhupada explained that oftentimes, or in many ways, the only suffering that people experience in Satyayuga is that they feel very sad when they think about the Kali Yuga, how people are going to be struggling, when they think about how certain people and living entities are suffering in hellish conditions, either hellish places, like hellish planets, or in hellish bodies, like animal bodies and less than animal bodies. Sometimes people, of course, question, is there a hell? Like, we've all heard, I guess, of John Lennon and his famous song, Imagine, that people love and many devotees love. Unfortunately, it is a lot of nonsense. Imagine, you know, there's no heaven above us and no hell beneath us. Sorry, Mr. Lennon, if you missed it badly. There's hell. And for people to understand or accept that there's a hell in the sense of a place, an actual place where people live, and but it's just an extremely unpleasant place, well, that may be difficult for people, but to accept that certain living entities are living in hellish conditions, it's not so hard. The animals being raised on the farms nowadays for people to eat, it is just terrible. It is simply terrible. And so many living entities just living in utter ignorance, complete ignorance, and suffering terribly, and then they die. So it's easier to see from our perspective. If our perspective as human beings is supposed to be normal, this is what is meant to be the average or proper type of living condition, then certainly if the animal and insect and bird and what to speak about, you know, the bacterial level of existence, unicellular little beings, well, it should be quite easy to see that they're living in hellish conditions. So, but such yuga, that was the only suffering there was. Prabhupada mentions that sometimes they feel sad, that, you know, just think about these poor people in Kali Yuga living in hell, sinking into hell, in hell sinking. It's such a shame. And thinking about the other species and how they're struggling and failing in material existence. Other than that, life is happy. Life is very happy. So, and of course, it is proportionate to the life expectancy. That in the immediate previous age, Dwapara Yuga people lived for 1,000 years, now they live for 100 maximum. So the amount of enjoyment is proportionate. That they would enjoy material sense gratification, which would give them feelings of enjoyment 10 times more than people nowadays. And then in the Treta Yuga, before that, then people lived for 10,000 years. And so their enjoyment, just their ordinary enjoyment, eat, sleep, mate, defend, all these just activities of sense gratification, they would experience 100 times more enjoyment stimulation from their sensual activities than people experience now. And in the Satya Yuga, where people lived 100,000 years, then they would enjoy 1,000 times more than people enjoy today. Yes. And what to speak of that? This is just talking about the human species on this planet. What to speak of the planets of the demigods, the heavenly planets? What to speak of that? And ultimately, what to speak of life on Brahmaloka, where Brahma lives 311,040,000,000,000 of our years, and his associates, the other residents there, because he is not alone on Brahmaloka, the other residents there, they also live 311,040,000,000,000 years, give or take a few billion. When it gets to that level, 1 billion here, 1 billion there, it really doesn't make much difference at all. Really not at all. So, in other words, their life expectancy is what? Three, because they live 311 trillion of our years. So their life expectancy is 3.11 trillion, am I right? Yeah. Times more than us. 3.11 trillion times longer. And their experience of sense gratification is also 311 trillion times more than whatever enjoyment we may get from, you know, the best intoxication. Oh, the best illicit sex, the best whatever it may be. So it's really quite inconceivable, isn't it, what it means. But still, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Aravarita Norajuna. From the highest planet, he specifically mentions Ah Brahma Bhuvana. From the planet of Lord Brahman, down to way beneath this earth planet that we're on, the hellish planet, and the worst of the hellish planets. So from the highest level Brahma Loka to the very lowest in the material world, all places of misery, they're all places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. Even that Brahma Loka is described as a place of misery. Even though compared to earth, it is a place of much, much higher. It's for us, we cannot conceive what it means to enjoy 3 trillion times more. It's just, you know, it means nothing tangible at all. Maybe twice as much, you can sort of get some idea. Yes. So, therefore, as it's described here with Dhruva Maharaj, he was not materially attached at all. Actually, he was absorbed in devotional service to the Lord. And this is what we should be doing or trying to do to come to that point where we have no real interest in anything other than rendering service and pleasing Krishna. Prabhupada says here, a devotee is not concerned with enjoyment or distress. He simply desires to execute devotional service. That's all. And whether happiness by material standards, distress by material standards, whatever's there, good health, bad health, etc., etc., political circumstances in society around us. But the devotee is simply interested in pleasing Krishna and is happy doing that. Prabhupada told the story of one yogi who was very detached. He was a very hairy yogi. Hair. He had hair all over his body and long hair. And he had a benediction. He would live for as long as he had any hair on his body, and only one hair would fall out every day of Brahma. So how long was he going to live? Really a long time. The lifetimes of many Brahmas. Many, many. So anyway, there he was like that. And so he's a big yogi, renunciate, and transcendentalist. And some followers appeared on the scene, and the followers, wanting to serve their spiritual master, they said to him, you know, and plus on top of that, this yogi was sitting outside. He had no place of residence at all, not even like a hut or not even an umbrella over his head. He was just living outside. In the heat and the cold and the rain and whatever came, he just didn't bother at all. So the followers said that, you know, you are living like this. Why would it be all right with you if we at least built you a hut so you can sit in it and not be exposed to the elements? And that yogi said, well, he said, actually, don't worry about it. It's okay. You don't need to do it because I'm only here temporarily. That's the end of the story. I'm only here temporarily. So, just see. But this is the type of consciousness that the devotee should develop. Of course, we have to look after the body. If we're just too negligent with our bodies, you know, because we have Kali Yuga bodies, and they're very susceptible to the material conditions. And if it's too hot, we may feel very uncomfortable and even become ill if it's too hot. And if it's too too cold, we can easily become ill, because our bodies, particularly as you get old, your body becomes much more sensitive. But still, in general, in the general sense, we should try to live in that way, that not be too distracted by the material conditions that we're living in and having to deal with. Rather, just try to tolerate them and keep focused in Krishna consciousness. So, Dhruva Maharaj, what's being stated here in the verses, that he diminished the reactions of his pious activities by enjoyment. And he would practice austerities in Krishna consciousness. And one result of those austerities was he would diminish his bad karma, his inauspicious reactions. I remember back in the old days of, you know, old style ISKCON, whenever a devotee would get sick, like a cold, anything, kick their toe, whatever it may be, he would be congratulated. Well done. You're reducing your bad karma. You're lucky. We're healthy. We're not so fortunate. Anyway, it's an interesting way of looking at things. But of course, this is actually what happens. We know Krishna says, Sarvadharman Pravichaja, Mame Kam Sharanam Raja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo, Mokshayishyami Masuchaha, that just abandon all varieties of religion and any other conceptions of life and ways of life, and just surrender to me, and I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So it's a fact that when we surrender to Krishna, that Krishna takes our reactions. And therefore it can be considered that devotees, and not just the most advanced devotees, but basically any sincere devotee is free from their karma. But still, things happen. Sickness comes, sometimes some anxiety may come, something may be stolen perhaps sometime, or maybe sometime someone will give you something. Just give you lots of money or give you a house. These things happen sometimes to some people, to some devotees also, that some material facility just comes their way and they have not worked for it, at least in this lifetime. So what is it? Well, of course, we say it's Krishna's mercy, but actually it's also our karma. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai, Shri Shri Prahlad Nrisimhadeva Ki
Jai.
Krishna has taken our karma when we surrender to him at that point. And now Krishna keeps our karma in reserve. You know, as they say, keep it for a rainy day. You never know. There are people who hoard things. They hoard, you know, whatever they come across. Because you never know. You never know when you might need it. Like, I don't know what, some insignificant thing. But like, you know, you've already got 20 of them. You never know when you might need the 21st. Whatever it is. So Krishna keeps our karma in reserve. And then when Krishna feels we need some sort of stimulus of some sort, then Krishna sends our karma. You know, particularly we notice it. You know, when Krishna sends some good karma, that's fine. You know, that's nice. But if Krishna sends some bad karma, if Krishna feels we need to learn a lesson, a little bit of a stern lesson to sober ourselves up a bit, then Krishna sends some of your bad karma. Bang. And then some suffering is there. So, yes, under the direction of the Lord. So it's the Lord's mercy, very much the Lord's mercy. But at the same time, he's using your karma. Yes, so the devotees are not really concerned, though. Like, I want to burn up my bad karma as quickly as possible. So Krishna, please make me as sick as possible. And then I can burn up the bad karma. Let me be sick for 10 years. Then I'll burn up all my karma. Well, sorry, even if you were sick for 10 years, you'd only burn up a small fraction of your karma. Small, perhaps even unnoticeable. Because we've been living in this material world so long, and we've accumulated a vast amount of karmic reaction. Just consider that people, your average person on this planet, every day, they're engaging in so much sinful activity. It's amazing. And just if they eat 2 or 3 meals a day, usually some meat of some sort will be involved in 1 or 2 or even all 3 of those meals. And if you eat the meat of an innocent animal, then you have to, particularly cows, you have to take birth 1,000 times on a very unpleasant, hellish planet for every hair on the body of the animal. Now, what does that mean? That is something very, very substantial. So the devotee doesn't really think in those terms. Burning up my karma in this way or that. Although it's happening. But the devotee is simply concerned, how will I please Krishna? How can I please Krishna? How can I develop my relationship with Krishna like this? How can I be a proper devotee? Yes. How can I follow the process of bhakti yoga properly and really take advantage of the process and really benefit from the process by reawakening my Krishna consciousness, my dormant Krishna consciousness in truly meaningful ways, and not just some sentimental or frivolous idea of what it means to actually become a real devotee. The Sahajiyas, Prabhupada talks about the Sahajiyas in one class, that they like to imagine that, well, of course they know, which is true, that we all have eternal relationships with Krishna in the spiritual world, and the highest relationship is a conjugal relationship. So they have aspirations for that sort of relationship. But they think it can be achieved just like that, in a very casual way. Very casual way. Without really becoming a pure devotee as such. And really completing the process of sadhana bhakti properly. So therefore they have the idea, if there's a man and a woman, that I will be Krishna, and you will be Radha, and we will become very Krishna conscious by having our conjugal pastimes together. So people who get into this condition, Prabhupada's talking about this in one lecture, people who get into this condition and they're too convinced and they're just too much into this and they can't actually practice devotional service properly, then it's very hard to help them. It's very hard to help them because they think we're doing very well. I'm Krishna and you're Radha, right? And life is good. Yes, we're very Krishna conscious here. So Prabhupada gives the example to illustrate the sort of the foolishness and the unfortunateness of being in such a situation. Prabhupada gives the example of what he calls a kacha jackfruit. Kacha just means bad, really. But in this context, kacha, he's applying this term kacha to a jackfruit, which it is fully developed. It's fully developed. It's fully ripe. And it's practically ready to fall off the tree and just rot on the ground. However, something went wrong in its development. And so, even though it's a jackfruit, which is normally this big, it's really like practically the biggest fruit you'll ever see. Big fruit. But now this jackfruit, the kacha jackfruit, it's this size. It's just tiny. But it's fully developed. And it's fully ripe. But it's useless. Because it's like a fruit. And it's not edible and it's not of any real utility or any value. Therefore it's called kacha jackfruit. Just throw it away or just let it fall off and rot and that's it. So the jackfruit, that little kacha jackfruit, may think, look at me, I'm ripe. I'm mature. I'm fully developed. But it's useless, completely useless. Even though on a certain level it appears to be developed and he thinks he's developed, but he's not actually developed properly. And he's like a freak of nature. So we have to practice Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada is pointing out here. They're not concerned if by Krishna's arrangement I am to get materially good things. Well, let it be if it's Krishna's arrangement. And I will serve Krishna in that context. And if Krishna takes everything away, and I'm living in a very poor situation, then, well, if it's Krishna's will, let it be. And I'll serve Krishna under those circumstances. And dedicate myself simply to pleasing Krishna without any real concern for what my material conditions are. So if we do like this, then during the course of this life, we will be extremely happy. We'll be very, very happy in Krishna consciousness, wherever we may be serving Krishna, under whatever circumstances we may be serving Krishna. We'll be very happy. And at the end of this life, we'll go back to Krishna for eternal life full of bliss and full of knowledge. Just in that regard, let me just close by telling you one sort of amusing little story, an experience of my own. When I was distributing books in London, I think it was 1976 or so, and I got arrested by the police for the terrible crime, dangerous crime, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books on the street. It was Friday afternoon, and they understood I was a foreigner. They were afraid I would escape and jump the country and avoid the £5 fine, which we would normally get. So they locked me up for the weekend. Yeah, right through till Monday morning. Took off my Brahmin fit because they were afraid I might hang myself out of desperation, something like that. And took away my beads. But the devotees are always very kind. They brought me some Narathasadam. And the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam had just arrived in the country that day. The first printing of the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So they brought me the sixth canto. And I chanted my rounds, ate my Mahaprasada, and there was not much else to do sitting in the prison cell. Really nothing to do at all. So I just read the sixth canto, the whole thing. And it was just so nice. It was just nectar. It was amazing. The story of Vritrasura. Wow. It was truly wonderful. So on Monday morning I had to appear in the court. And I got fined £5 and released. And I thought, what a shame. I'd like to go back into the jail and read more. Because in the temple we were always so busy and running around here and there. We don't get so much time to read. So it's just an example. But it's true. It was like that. Yes, and so devotional service is like that. If we become absorbed in devotional service, then actually we'll become oblivious to the external circumstances. We'll become oblivious. And what we will be feeling will just be the pleasure of devotional service. Transcendental pleasure. Yes. So this is very nice. And this is what Dhruva was doing. And yes, he perfected his love. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful class and all the other wonderful classes you've given. My question is that where should our emphasis be, like not to become a gotcha jackfruit? So if we are like new devotees,
yeah. So well, we have to follow the instructions and not follow our minds. Because our minds, one of the first things we should learn in Krishna consciousness is don't trust the mind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about two types of pseudo-gurus, false gurus. They may look like gurus, look like, you know, they can help us and guide us and explain things like that for us. So one, of course, one pseudo-guru is just a person who's teaching some bogus philosophy, some nonsense philosophy, as if it's spiritual. But the other pseudo-guru is the mind. The mind is just full of opinions and, you know, like understandings and full of advice and ideas, what should be done and what shouldn't be done, what will be helpful and detrimental. That's the mind. So this is, the mind is such a danger at any point, but particularly in the early stages. It's just, wow, it's really like a crisis situation in the early stages, because one is deeply conditioned and has deeply rooted tendencies to just go back into material life easily. And the mind is in charge of all of that. So instead of following the instructions of the mind, we should follow the instructions of the spiritual master, of Krishna, of Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, in a very careful way, a very scrupulous way, to make sure. And scrupulous means to just make sure that you're doing things the way they should be done. Checking to see, am I following the process properly, like this? And then you can avoid becoming a kacha devotee, a kacha jackfruit. You know, Prabhupada also said there's some music school in Austria, I think. It's like the top music school in the world. And when people go there to learn, first thing they ask, have you taken music lessons before? And you say, yes, you know, I've been playing violin for 10 years. Then they will charge you more than if you say, well, no, you know, I just want to learn music. I don't know anything. Because first of all, they have to unlearn you. So, yes, this is the problem, that sometimes devotees learn some things that are not appropriate. But they seem spiritual and nice. And they become attached to these things. But, you know, either they're not ready, or there are mistakes in them, there's some misconceptions involved. Like if they're coming from some other sampradaya, for example, and something like that. So we have to keep in good association. And in this context, good association means keeping the association of the spiritual master, Prabhupada, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, through studying their instructions and following their instructions, and keep in good association of devotees, not just in the sense of that I'm sitting here and you're sitting there, therefore we are close, but actually taking guidance, discussing, learning from, accepting the guidance of more senior devotees like that. This is what good association actually means. Not just like jolly and happy, although that may also be good association. But ultimately, good association means that you are being genuinely enriched spiritually by keeping company with certain people and from the input that they're giving you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Srila Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj ki.
Jai.
Thank you very much. Kitas. What is it? Kitas Palavim or something?
Palion.
Palion. Palion. Kitas Palion. Hare Krishna.
Very much.
That's good. So see that though. I'll say it. Okay, we got to go.
Thank you, Maharaj, very much for the very uplifting and enlightening. It's like the spiritual weekend holiday for all of us.
You just feel uplifted by Ratiyatri.